good morning, everybody. Glad you're with us on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall, and today is a Dear Diary Day, if ever there were one, because today, ladies and gentlemen, in case you had any doubt as to who is going to win Academy Awards in categories like Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, etc., we have the answers for you. Some 3 weeks before the awards are actually given out, but our flawless panel here of Jed Dietz, the director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Hornaday, the film critic for the Washington Post, they never get this stuff wrong, ever, ever, ever. So here we are. Good morning to you both.
We do have the answers, but we can't count it.
Yeah, but you can't tell. If you tell us, you'll have to kill us. There you go. But Jed, before we talk Oscars, you have just returned from Sundance, where you go every year. So give us a little report. There's a bunch of films there that are graduates of the film festival, Maryland Film Festival.
Yeah, many. And one of the most thrilling of all those was not an alum, first-time filmmaker, writer, director named Marielle Heller, whose script we supported. We do this once a year, and she won the Maryland Filmmakers Fellowship a couple years back. And it was in competition at Sundance, and one of the sort of big talked about films, and Kristen Wiig's in it, and Alexander Skarsgård's in it, and then this young actress, Belle Powley, who's going to be talked about a whole lot. And it's a graphic novel that she's adapted into a film, and, you know, it's thrilling to see it made and the audience reaction to it. So that was great.
Other big standout movies that we'll be hearing a lot about now that they've been shown at Sundance?
Yeah, I think there are a lot. One of our alums, Alex Gibney, made a documentary about Scientology that was a sensation going in. I mean, the church had taken out full-page ads against it, and the screening was great because there were a lot of people who were in the film and former members of the church who talked about it, and Lawrence Wright, who wrote the book that Alex had adapted or used as sort of a base for the documentary. And interestingly enough, I saw that back-to-back with another documentary about fundamentalist Mormons called Prophets Pray, about Warren Jeffs, who's now in jail, and a defiant polygamist living in southern Utah in their own community. So that was an interesting combination of things to see. Mm-hmm. But there were also a lot of comedians, either subjects of films or in roles you wouldn't expect. And the subject of films were just two great examples. Was Tig Notaro. There's an incredible film called Tig, about the year between her now legendary.
Yeah, she was diagnosed with breast cancer and did a whole set
hello,
about it.
Yeah. Welcome, you know, I have cancer. No, really, I have cancer at the Largo Club. And the film is sort of 1 year from that to the anniversary performance at the Largo Club. And you follow her in very intimate ways. And it's instructive about, I mean, she's an amazing character, but it's also instructive about the life of a comedian, and and especially as her life, her fame really blew up around after the first Largo one.
And sort of people like Louis C.K. saying she's the finest comedian in the country, and you know, she got all sorts of kudos from all sorts.
Yeah, he said that 30-minute piece was the "Hello, I Have Cancer" one was like one of the most remarkable stand-up things he'd ever seen in his life. Yeah. And
there's another one about a comedian who's kind of a recluse up in upstate New York somewhere.
Yeah, and it's made by a comedian, Bobcat Goldthwait, who has been doing film. We've had a couple of his at the festival, one of which starred Robin Williams, who was a great friend of his. So he's been very much in the world of comedy since he was a teenager from upstate New York. And this film called Call Me Lucky is about a very good a comedian named Bob Crimmins that I never heard of, but he's a terrific comedian, and he's very political. So he's sort of in the, you know, a little bit of Lenny Bruce and sort of Mort Sahl, you know, anger and lots of knowledge being thrust at you. And then he just sort of took himself out of the comic world, and this film is about all of that, and that's remarkable.
And Sarah Silverman's in a movie that in which she does not play a comic role at all. I mean, she's an hysterical, very, very gifted comedian, but she has taken on a very, very dramatic role here.
Yeah, exactly. She has actually. She's in the Tig. She introduces Tig in the anniversary performance in that documentary. But this is something completely different. She's done a little bit of dramatic acting. She was in a Sarah Pauley film, but she is the centerpiece of this. It's a horrific story of a mom and a wife in the throes of depression, and all the stuff that spins out of that. And it's unrelenting, but a brilliantly made film. James Ponsoldt is the writer-director. Yeah. And her, she is the core of the film. There are a lot of good actors in it, but it's a complete devotion to this role.
Yeah, interesting. And, of course, Anne Hornaday, she's not the first comedian to make the leap into dramatic roles. I think of Bill Murray, sure. Robin Williams.
Bobcat Goldthwait movie.
World's Greatest Dad.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the Oscars coming up at the end of this month, Steve Carell is one of the people nominated for Best Actor in a very serious movie called Foxcatcher.
Indeed.
The other nominees in that category, Bradley Cooper, Benedict Cumberbatch, Michael Keaton, and Eddie Redmayne. This is a very crowded, difficult, competitive field this year.
It is, and I think it's probably the most difficult to predict because I think my sense is that it's probably going to come down between Keaton and Redmayne.
And that's for Birdman and The Theory of Everything, in which Redmayne plays Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. Correct. In a very physically demanding and convincing performance as Hawking. But Keaton just absolutely carries Birdman in a really bravura, breakout, comeback performance. But then we have Bradley Cooper, who I think that American Sniper has just become such a cultural phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've written about it. You wrote about it just last week. Mm-hmm. It's grossing something like $250 million as we speak today. And you call it a professional procedural.
Right. You know, it was because the movie has really drawn a lot of controversy around it in terms of people are trying to, I think, pigeonhole it ideologically as pro-war, anti-war. And I feel like it's kind of the wrong argument to be having about it. And I think what's confounding people is that it falls into this genre of war film that has emerged in a post-draft era where soldiers and service members are being portrayed as what they are, which is professionals. And I think that the great master of this is Catherine Bigelow with The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty, where she and the screenwriter Mark Boal really very rigorously kept the spin off the ball in terms of ideology and really tried to portray these people as competent, dedicated professionals who happen to be doing extraordinary jobs and then kind of allowing the audience to come away with their own meanings. And I think that's what American Sniper does. I mean, I thought it was a terrific movie. I think it's terrifically entertaining, engrossing, and it certainly didn't threaten, my political ideas about the war, pro or con. But anyway, that's what I wanted to write about.
You mentioned in your piece in The Post that it's perhaps one of the few films in which Sarah Palin and Jane Fonda can tweet in agreement that it's a great movie.
And I can see both points. And I think what the people who are taking it as pro-war are misunderstanding, they're confusing respect for valorization.
Right.
And I think the other side is doing the same thing. Just seeing simple respect as endorsement or some kind of rah-rah hoo-ha.
But it also seems that nobody thought that this movie would be the sort of breakout hit that it is.
True.
I mean, this really, and I understand it was even in Baghdad for a little while before it was closed a couple of days ago. Your paper, The Post, just reported that, they tried to screen it for a few days at an upscale mall in the outskirts of Baghdad. And finally, there was enough of an outcry, including the culture ministry of Iraq, that office. They closed it down. But Jed Dietz, in terms of the performance of Bradley Cooper, does it stand up and, have a fighting chance against the likes of Mr. Keaton and Cumberbatch, et cetera?
Yeah, I agree with Anne. I mean, it came out of, and with you, because I think it did come out of nowhere. I think it was, people just sort of, because of the title and Clint, I think they just thought, oh, well, this is just going to be one of those
movies. Clint Eastwood, the director. Yeah.
Yeah. And people had pigeonholed, I think, the whole thing. And it just is something else. It's a much bigger, more emotional story, and I would add, beautifully made. And I will not say that about every Clint Eastwood film, but this one edited to it's perfection, I think. And I think the Bradley Cooper performance is just as startling as all, just out of a pigeonhole as all that. I mean, whether you like this character or not, and you're going to feel strongly, I think, one way or the other, the portrayal of it is so convincing and so deep, I think, about that world. And it's interesting to me because I didn't know very much about him. I mean, I knew the name and, sort of the headline version of the story. And since, of course, his wife who survived him has been on television a lot and all that stuff.
And the trial for the man who is accused of shooting him has just begun.
Yeah. Yeah. So
this is Chris Kyle we're talking about, who's the subject of American Sniper, who was murdered by a vet that he was mentoring.
And the more you see sort of, and hear about the real story, the more impressive the film is and Bradley Cooper's performances to me, because I think he totally got it. Mm.
And a lot of the controversy stems from the depiction of Mr. Kyle, mm-hmm. who is a complicated, complex character.
Sure.
And there are those who say that, you know, certain parts of his life and his attitudes and, you know, his
sure.
behavior is not taken up. A similar argument made against Selma,
exactly.
you know,
yeah.
and whether it's factually accurate, historically accurate.
Right.
Selma and American Sniper, both in the Best Picture category, along with Birdman. Boyhood, the movie mm-hmm. that Ethan Hawke stars in, that Mr. Linklater took 12 years to make, an amazing movie. The Grand Budapest Hotel, another fabulous movie. The Imitation Game, again, The Theory of Everything, and Whiplash. So a very crowded, very lengthy category for Best Picture. Selma, controversial in that that's the only nomination it got. People thought that perhaps...
It got song.
Which it'll probably win.
Yeah. And so, you know, it wasn't there, not the actor category.
Yeah.
It's not there in the director category. It's not there. And what do you think Selma's chance of taking Best Picture this year are?
I think it's probably, I guess it's probably not great. I mean, my sense going in is that it's been kind of a Boyhood Birdman race. But then again, American Sniper, you know, they might
right.
want to recognize American Sniper's achievement, both aesthetic and commercial, by it kind of has those Best Picture contours to it. And it's unfortunate that Ava DuVernay wasn't nominated for
yeah.
director. And I would have, as much as I think The Imitation Game is a really engrossing story and very well told, I'm not sure that directorially, you know, I might have taken Morton Tilden out of that slot and maybe put Ava DuVernay in, just because I think Selma is such a crowning achievement,
yeah.
just technically
and of course,
artistically.
I mean, how much does the financial success of a movie inform the decision of the folks who are voting in this category? Because, you know, there have been movies like Catherine Bigelow's Hurt Locker, which was mm-hmm. by no means a box office success,
right.
but it won the Oscar for Best Picture. You know, does Sniper sort of, you know, get up a couple of legs because it's made such a splash at this particular time, you know, right before the awards themselves?
It does more, not because of pure box office, but because as you get into studio films, you're now expanding sort of the crew base that is attached to the film and just naturally want to vote for it and support it to the extent they're Academy members. But the interesting thing is in all these nominations, and of course the category has been expanded now, they can go up to 10 for Best Picture. Except for American Sniper, none of them have grossed big dollars.
True.
And it's sort of fascinating that the Academy in the last couple of years is really tending toward honoring the art of movie making, which is excluding a lot of the studio movies, mm-hmm. except
well,
in the technical categories.
And I think, and I've written this before and I'll write it again, that I think it's emerged, awards season has emerged as an alternative business model. I mean,
yeah.
they have the tentpole business model that the industry thrives on. This is an alternative marketing plan
yeah.
that Harvey Weinstein famously has perfected and done very well with The Imitation Game. I mean, I just
yep.
saw that's grossed $140-some million, which is
stunning,
outstanding
really. Yeah.
for that scale of a film. So I'm all for it. You know, I mean, I think we can kind of look at Oscar night as being silly and self-congratulatory and frivolous, but it does allow studios and boutique studios to make this kind of film and get that kind of earned awareness
mm-hmm.
From things like red carpet.
So let me put you on the spot here, both of you. And who's going to win Best Picture?
This is a spot.
It is a spot. That's what we're here for. I mean, I could give my opinion,
oh my
but of
gosh.
Course, it's well known that no one cares what I think.
Well, that would be three of us here.
Oh, my goodness. I think I'm going to have to say Boyhood.
Boyhood. All right.
That's what I'm going to say, too.
Right. Two Boyhoods. I'm going with Selma only because I want it to win.
Tom.
Because I want it to. It's informed by nothing other than I just want it to
admirable
win.
Admirable faith.
There
I think
you
that's
go.
Wonderful.
Because I
hope everyone sees it.
I wept my eyes out in that movie.
It's
I was
a
so moved
film.
And so taken by that movie. Okay. Best Actress. We have 2 Days, One Night, Marion Cotillard, the French actress, Felicity Jones in The Theory of Everything, Stephen Hawking's wife, Julianne Moore, playing a woman who is dealing with oncoming Alzheimer's disease in Still Alice, Rosamund Pike in Gone Girl, and Reese Witherspoon, kind of an outlier in this category, it seems, for a movie that she had a lot to do with making called Wild. What do we think?
Julianne Moore, Walking Away.
For Still Alice.
That's what I think, too.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And let's, real quick, we just have a second here, the documentary category. Huge, huge category. Citizen Four, Finding Vivian Mayer, Last Days in Vietnam, that's the Rory Kennedy film, The Salt of the Earth, and Virunga. Citizen Four, the Edward Snowden movie. Big, big splash. What do we think?
I think that should win. I think it's the most. There are a lot of good films. They're all great in this category, but Citizen Four is a stunning piece of work.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
You think so? And Best Actor: Robert Duvall, Ethan Hawke, Edward Norton, Mark Ruffalo, and J.K. Simmons in Whiplash.
J.K. Simmons for a movie that Jed
supporting
and I both
actor.
Didn't. Oh, yes, that's right. Supporting actor. J.K. Simmons will win.
Excuse me. That's supporting actor, right? Yeah. And then supporting actress: Patricia Arquette, also in Boyhood, Laura Dern in Wild, Keira Knightley in Imitation Game, Emma Stone in Birdman, and Meryl Streep, the perennial favorite, in Into the Woods. What do we think?
Patricia Arquette,
Boyhood again.
Yeah, I also.
So let's see. All right, so you can make sure that Ann and Jed are once again right by tuning in on February 22nd at 7 o'clock. Jed and Ann, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good to
All
be
right,
here.
Again, the Oscars, ABC on February 27th at 7 o'clock. Check your local listings and check out our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Coming up Monday, grammar guru John McIntyre and a review of a new production of Gigi at the Kennedy Center. Also next week, Sheila will take a look at Governor Hogan's education budget, and I'll talk with the author Ann Tyler. She's got a great new book out. That's all coming up next week on Maryland Morning with Sheila Cass. Got to run. I've got to go get my jewels from Harry Winston. He's lending me something that he tells me go great with the pajamas that I'll be wearing to watch the Oscars. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great weekend.